Welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We are doing one of our mid-August shows, which we do periodically. Why not? Why not? We are in LA all together here today, because I know some people have been following this saga. Today, ladies and gentlemen, I got my Chinese visa.
Oh, yeah.
With 1 week to spare. Which may not sound like it was a tight time schedule, but I was a little bit worried about it.
Did you see any babies in line with you at the concert? Because I heard that people take newborn babies.
At least a dozen newborn babies were.
Wow.
That's Om Young Masuk, who's with us here in LA. He's been my partner on Team USA the last 2 weeks, and I appreciate that. Team USA is in Australia, and I'll be rejoining them. I know for sure now I'll be rejoining them in Shanghai.
So you're not withdrawing?
Next week. I am not withdrawing.
You and De'Aaron Fox.
Although my wife would like me to withdraw to spend more time with my family. But and this is Ramona Shelburne. And Ramona, we're in the studio in L.A. where you recorded, or at least I should say tracked, your 30 for 30 podcast that is out today, The Sterling Affair. Now, I'm just going to say, Sterling Affairs.
Because there are many.
There were. You've been talking about this all day, and I know this from book tours. I don't want to overburden you with blabbing on about it. We'll talk about it a little bit, but...
I'm good.
Will you...
Honestly, it's been my life for like the last like 5 years.
I know.
Right? It's like my side hustle, right?
The last... Like every time I would see Ramona for the last year, she'd be like, well, we've got this interview set up for the podcast, and we've got to redo this for the podcast, and I got to fly to Detroit to talk to Blake Griffin for the podcast, and I mean, you've been working on this forever, and you feel, when you listen to it, I listen to the whole thing, you feel the weight of the work, if that makes sense. You feel, you know, all the interviews, you feel the editing, the
scripting, music.
You give it in a very much more docile and professional tone than in this podcast. So, do you have memory? How long were you in this room?
Oh my god. So Mario Ruiz is sitting over here. He's our engineer right now. Chris Morales over there. Adam Bronstein. Those are our producers and sound engineers here at ESPN LA Radio. They have seen me have many, many meltdowns in this room, because tracking a podcast, a narrative podcast like that, which is like 5 hours of runtime.
Unlike this, which is unscripted, this is actually...
Yeah,
like,
you're just talking right here. You just sit here and talking to a mic. Like, when you do the podcast, I have scripts that I'm reading. I have to deliver every line perfectly. You have to do each line like 3 or 4 or 5 different times, because you want to give them different cuts to work with. Sometimes your voice sounds a little different on each day. Like, I had a little routine. I would come in. We spent like very many days in here. It was like me, Raina Kelly from The Undefeated, who's like one of my really good friends in the business, was the story editor on this. And my producer, Julia Lowry Henderson, she literally like flew in from Australia to like for mental support and like helping me track, because it's not like that easy to read scripts. Like, this is an actual job that people do voiceover acting.
Yeah, so I did the last book that I wrote, the previous book that I wrote, I did the audiobook.
Woo!
And it was very difficult. It took 3 days. Mm-hmm. I was exhausted. This last audiobook, someone else did it. So what does that tell you?
Yeah, I mean, it's
so you didn't get tips from Liev Schreiber?
Oh my god, that'd be amazing.
Let me tell, like, I'm not a trained actress, and like there were parts. I mean, you know, because you've listened to the podcast, there were some parts that I had to read that were fairly uncomfortable. I actually way too into Donald Sterling's depositions, and like I thought I was going to have a harder time with it than I did. Like the first couple times, I was like laughing, and then I was like, nope. You know what? Just get into character. Just be Donald.
Can I say, because this I'm sure was on the podcast floor, that Donald's, from the stories that I've heard, Donald Sterling's, how do I want to put this artfully? He was not afraid of showing off his girlfriends.
Oh, yeah.
And he was even not necessarily at times... shy about certain acts with these girlfriends, not necessarily in public, but where people could see them.
Yeah.
Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, it's a very fair statement.
Did I put that artfully enough?
What you call it?
I mean, I don't know.
It's
what,
like
we don't
a voyeur,
even,
right?
Listen, there's no prudishness to the podcast.
Right.
I mean, I literally like use the
But
word.
I'm saying, no, but there's some stuff that you couldn't say, that I know the stories that you know.
Yeah. Like, I've heard stories about plane rides and...
country
car
club.
Rides and country clubs and polo lounges and
yeah.
all that.
Yeah. Who's going to play you in the movie?
I don't know. That'd be good. It was interesting doing this because usually when you write a story, you don't put yourself in it too much. I'm not one of those, even when I do long form, I very rarely will take the first person. But I sort of have to be in this. Like, I'm the narrator.
Yeah, but you're not in it really that – I mean, you're in it a little bit, but it's not like it's – I mean –
Yeah, just a few moments where I pop up and I'll like, give a few monologues here and there. But it is interesting when you are – it's sort of like the reporter's journey, right? Like there's a couple of these holy shit moments.
I don't know if we can do that on this podcast. Oh, well.
Andrew's got a bleep machine. He's got it.
Okay.
There's a few of these like, oh, my gosh moments. There you go. Where – I mean, I still remember being in my car calling David Kraft from the news desk and being like, Crafty.
So yeah, when they were gonna sell out from underneath them. So one of and I don't want to give away the podcast, but
you can give it away. It's okay.
The negotiations for Steve Ballmer to buy the Clippers were amazing. Actually, two negotiations, both about purchases of a team that you discuss in here. One is when Jerry Buss bought the Lakers. Couldn't get the money together at the literally, Ramona, the 11th hour. When did Jerry Buss call Donald Sterling?
It was like 11 o'clock at night, and they were needed to close in the morning.
Yeah, and he, I assume that Jerry Buss had been trying to
close
the Lakers. Okay,
something fell through. So he thought he had enough money to close the deal with Jack Kent Cook. So Jack Kent Cook. So when I'm tracking this, I have to say Jack Kent Cook. That's a hard one to say when you're tracking. You have to say that a lot.
I grew up in Washington, so.
So you know.
Washington's, yeah.
So he had one of the most expensive divorces in California history, right? He gets
until the McCourts.
Until the McCourts. and tell the Sterlings if they would have ever got divorced.
Right.
But they're too smart for that. They, you know, it's just easier to stay together and keep your money together. Jack has to sell the team, and Jerry Buss basically like is stalking him because he just wants to buy the Lakers and all the holdings. And it's this really complicated real estate transaction.
Yeah, he had to buy the Kings, the Lakers, the Forum.
And some ranch up in Fort Tejon.
Yeah, I want to know more about this ranch. Like, was this a, I had to be a nice piece of property.
It was pretty nice, actually. I think they're like, Jerome Stanley was like, in the podcast, he's an agent who used to, he was like you guys like the West Wing?
Yeah.
Okay, you know the Dulé Hill character?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so he's like, you know, Charlie, right?
He was the body man.
Yeah, the body man. Like, he's like, no, like the smart kid who's like out of law school and
I'll bet Jerry Buss's body men could tell some interesting stories about bodies.
Yes. Leave it at that. So Jerome Stanley said, like, one of his jobs was like to go up to that ranch and come up with a plan for like what they should do with it. Like, should we do a winery there? Should we do like tours? I mean,
he doesn't have enough money at the very end.
Yeah, he's $3 million short. Some of the financing fell through, and he calls up Donald Sterling at like 11 o'clock at night and goes over to their house. And Jerry Buss knew Donald Sterling because they were both just like real estate guys in LA in the 70s. And they had a mutual friend named Frank Mariani, who was actually still a part owner of the Lakers. And Frank was like the social connector. He was like the guy that knew everybody, the mogul behind, it was Buss Mariani, Enterprise, I think is the name. It was the corporation that owned a bunch of apartment buildings around Los Angeles. And so Donald goes, yeah, I'm interested in being a part of this, but I don't really want a piece of the Lakers. I'll buy the apartment buildings from you.
I'll buy you. Buss couldn't find financing, so he had to sell off some apartment buildings at the last minute.
Yeah, it was like 11 apartment buildings in Santa Monica.
Oh.
Imagine what those are worth now.
Yeah,
he sold them for $3.5 million. It was like the last $3.5 million he needed to close.
Yeah, like in the morning, like they went to the bank and got the money.
Yeah, literally, like went to the bank and got the money, and that's like how Jerry Buss was able to close on sale. And you know, Jack Kent Cook wasn't sure Jerry was ever going to be able to pull that off. Because it was a really complicated real estate swap. It wasn't just a straight money transaction.
Why couldn't they ask for more time?
They just needed to close. I mean, that's how it goes.
Yeah, he probably wanted somebody else wanted to buy the team. Yeah. So that's a good story. It's told at more length than we just told there. But the other one was when Ballmer bought the team. Now, to go over this, Donald Sterling had been declared mentally, was it incompetent? What was the...
Incapacitated.
So now Shelly Sterling has a team, and basically, I don't want to give away the podcast, but she's got to deal with the NBA. They're going to sell it. So she's taking bids, but she had to do a sale of a team in like 10 days or 10 or 12 days.
So the mental incapacitation is what's called Plan B. All right. This is her lawyer, Pierce O'Donnell.
Who, I've heard of other Plan Bs, but leave that alone.
There's this really kind of riveting detail that I keep thinking there's more to, but I think it might have just been a matter of course. But the Sterling Family Trust had been changed in December. And it was changed to add a clause that you do fairly frequently with older people, that if one of them is found by doctors to be mentally incapacitated or not capable of managing the trust or being a partner
in
the
trust. And all this went down in May. I mean, I don't know when
April.
When the recordings.
They were made in and around September.
Okay. So the recordings were like 6 or 7 months old, but so just to keep it on the calendar. So they make a change to the trust in Christmas. And then remember the playoffs were, yeah. Which was the first round going on. So that's just to set the timeline. So he gets to, so they go through the court case. He gets declared mentally.
Oh, no, so wait, here, let's all back up a little bit. Yeah. Okay, so the recordings remain, and the only reason they ever come out is because Shelley Sterling actually sues Vistaviano,
right? And
the
mistress. She was like blackmailing.
Yeah, it was a blackmail thing.
Yeah,
but it was because Shelley was suing her, and she just wanted her to drop a lawsuit. She's like, I don't want to give back this Bentley. I mean, kind of the whole point of being in a relationship.
Yeah. By the way, he gave her 4 cars.
Yeah.
Why do you have to give a mistress 4 cars? And it was a Bentley. What else?
Range Rover, a Ferrari. I heard one story about, you know, the Ferrari dealer that sold him the car. It was like a $250,000 car. Actually, like, ran into a Clippers employee and was like, "Oh, your boss was just here."
Oh,
and that's when the Clipper employee knew something was up because Donald wouldn't have driven a car like that.
Well, that's my thing. Like, so he bought her a condo. Yeah. I don't know what this condo looked like, but could she store 4?
No.
6-figure automobiles?
And the paparazzi who covered this told me, like, they could always tell when V was home because it was like, you know, she wanted one of those cars was out there. Like, it was always, you know, she had like colorful license plates and decorations. She wanted to be noticed.
Yeah.
And what's funny is she used to live in this apartment. It was like this crappy little apartment in West Hollywood. And when we were reporting this, we actually went to the apartments just to see, like, the upgrade that she went from, like, once he bought her the duplex. Yeah. It's literally 1 street over. It's like on the other side of the apartment, but like that's LA real estate. You can be same as New York home. You know that. Yeah. I mean, it's like you're 1 street over and you're from like your starter apartment. That's probably way overpriced that you, when you first moved to town and you're trying to be famous to like the duplex that your sugar daddy buys you.
All right. So Shelley has, long story short, Shelley has the ability to sell the team. So she's got to sell the team in a short period of time. You know, these NBA team sales, they get negotiated for months. Sometimes, like this Joseph Tsai, who just bought the Nets from Mikhail Prokhorov, that was negotiated over the course of years.
Yeah.
Okay, because he became a part owner, then a floor. She's got to do the deal in 10 days, or give or take, 10 or 12 days, something like that. So now tell the story of when. So there's people putting bids in. You know, Shelley's got a middleman, a lawyer who's taking the bids. But then what happens?
So they everyone's coming out. Remember Oprah?
Yeah.
Right. Oprah wants to buy the team and,
yeah.
David Geffen wants to buy the team. And it was like the bids and the money was astronomical. And there are those who have suggested that maybe that was part of the plan, that was part of the design.
It's like make them public to drive up the.
Yeah. Well, not just make them public. Short amount of time. So you have a distressed asset, but it's a very valuable distressed asset. This is a team in Los Angeles. There's only 30 beachfront properties in the NBA. This is some great beachfront property. This is LA. And there's not a whole condition of like, it's got to be sold before this NBA Board of Governors meeting on June 3rd. So they have 12 days to sell the team. And if they can't do it, then the Board of Governors is going to vote to sell the team. We're going to be tied up in litigation for years. It's going to probably, you know, who knows what we get to next? Like, I don't know if the players would have come back. There was a lot of people who were saying like, might just disband the team. Like, what would we do? Like,
no, that wasn't going to happen. But
it was never going to happen. But like, this was like, we were in totally uncharted territory because Donald was going to tie things up in court forever.
But I think the thing is like, I don't think these buyers were getting to her. These offers were getting to her, but Steve Ballmer got her phone number.
Steve Ballmer, like, and Shelley's kind of a night owl, so she's out in Malibu, and Steve Ballmer calls her up at 7 o'clock on a Friday morning and, like, totally wakes her up. Like, she's like, oh, man.
Yeah.
And he's like, hi, my name's Steve Ballmer. I want to buy the Clippers. And
well, hold on. I just want to pause you right here a second. By the way, Shelley Sterling told this story on the podcast.
Yeah.
This is from her memory. You're going to buy the Clippers and you just call up the owner and say, I want to buy the Clippers. That sounds basic. It sounds like how you try to buy a used car.
That sounds like Steve Ballmer, though. You just get right to the point.
Right.
Just go for it.
Yeah.
And she,
man knows what he wants.
Right. And he got her phone number.
And he probably was on like 5 cups of coffee by that point.
Yeah, 7 a.m., yeah.
And totally amped up. Yeah, you're right.
Or a microphone. And she doesn't know who it is because she's like groggy and sleepy.
Yeah,
and she thought it was Steve Ballmer. Like, not Ballmer, Bomber. So she calls up a friend of hers and she's like, hey, so I just got a call from Steve Ballmer. And she's like, it's not Ballmer. It's Ballmer.
Balls.
He's the CEO of Microsoft. He has like $20 billion. And she's like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
And they end up going to, I think, Nobu. She always took all the meetings at Nobu. She would like go out to dinner.
In Malibu.
And then,
yeah, Malibu.
Ballmer just really charmed her and she really trusted him. And I think one of the biggest things for her when she was deciding who she was going to sell the team to was not just the money, although that was obviously important, but she wanted it to go to one person because her and Donald had been a family ownership and she didn't want a consortium. She didn't want multiple owners.
Yeah.
She wanted like one person, clean, quick sale. And I mean, it's not like he didn't have the cash on hand.
The negotiation, this was the negotiation. Negotiation was, she's like, she wanted $2 billion. She said, he goes, so how much do you want? She said, $2 billion. Now, we've had 3 teams sell for over $2 billion now.
But at that time, though.
But the Bucks had just sold for what, Ramona? $600
million? $550 million.
Okay. Now, I realize the Bucks are not the Clippers, but just, just to frame it.
And okay, what the Nets sold with Barclays, right?
They were different transactions.
Yeah.
Don't pay attention to that. So the...
By the way, just the Clippers. You're not buying any property. The Sterlings actually still own the Clippers practice facility.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that really nice in Playa Vista.
Yeah.
So all the renovation work that's been done there this summer,
yeah,
Ballmer's been paying for it, but it's still owned by the Sterlings.
Oh, interesting.
Okay.
Like, so, she only sold the team.
All right. So she says $2 billion, which again is a crazy number at the time. It's a ridiculous overpay.
It's like 3.5 times what the last franchise just sold for.
Right.
And Forbes had valued them at less than a billion.
Right. Okay. And so she says $2 billion and he says, what's his counteroffer?
1.9.
So that's a funny thing. to me, that's hilarious.
Yeah.
That's just like, well, you never take the first offer, right? You know?
Yeah.
You know,
but 1.9, it's like the price is right. I'm going to come right under the number.
Right. That's what I'm saying. It's not much of a negotiating position. So she says, no, I want 2. So he agrees to 2, like right there, right?
He just wanted the team.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, he just lost out on the Kings.
Right. He lost
out
on the Kings. And the other thing was, there was all these bidders. And I remember like reading stories about these bidders and they're putting their bids together and they're trying to determine how much to offer. Okay. With our accountants, we've decided to offer $1.476 billion. You know, Ballmer's like, I'm just coming over the top. And the other thing that you described in this podcast was Donald's meeting with Ballmer.
Mm-hmm.
Because Donald Sterling, before he sold his team, at least half of his team, he met with them.
Yeah.
This is part of the podcast that I just find amazing. Ramona, what was that conversation?
So Bobby Cimini, who was Donald's lawyer, and you know, Donald had one lawyer, his name was Max Bleacher. He was like this 80-year-old guy who had represented him when he moved the team from Los Angeles. But this guy named Bobby Cimini was like, Bobby's like a real lawyer. Max is a good lawyer like a while ago, but you know, it was, let's just say he was not in his prime. Okay. And things happened so quickly in this case. Like by the time Cimini comes on, it's like everything's already done. It's like, you know, he was still interviewing for the job like 2 weeks after the tapes come out. It's like too late already. So Cimini comes in and he's just triaging, you know, he's just trying to give him some real representation, triage, whatever. And in the middle of this trial, he arranges a meeting between Ballmer and, Sterling at Sterling's house over in Beverly Hills. And Bobby said it was a couple hours long. And, I don't know if they were just trying to get Sterling to settle. I think that was my guess. And that's kind of the inference there. Because it was pretty clear Sterling was going to lose in the court case. Cimini says, he goes, yeah, Donald asked him, do you really have $2 billion?
Amazing.
And
he didn't quite know who he was.
Yeah. And he goes,
okay.
Oh yeah, I got it. And he goes, don't worry, I'll close the sale. And Donald goes, well, that's the stupidest thing I ever heard.
Right. This is what I love.
And
he goes, why do you got $2 billion in cash? He goes, no, he said, you have $2 billion in cash?
Yeah.
He goes, yeah, I got it.
Yeah.
And then Donald said,
well, and Donald's, that's the stupidest thing I ever heard. He goes, if you got $2 billion in cash, you should be like investing it. I mean, like, Donald's a real estate guy.
Yeah.
Right. You would never, he would never have $2 billion
in cash.
Right.
You go buy something and have that appreciate. Or, so first of all, you take the money and you let it appreciate. And then you claim depreciation on your taxes.
Right.
It's a pretty good game.
That's right.
Pretty good real estate game.
I just like the story about how, like, Steve Ballmer, you know, has $2 billion and Donald's like, yeah. What? Hey, you're stupid?
Yeah.
You?
And it was like, this, and Bobby has this great line about it being like a changing of the guard, right? Because we've seen this in the NBA. It used to be kind of real estate and oil mavens, and now it's more like tech money and hedge fund guys who own teams.
Right. Well, anyway, listen to that podcast. It's, we just went over two little small points that I always get wrapped up in the palace intrigue, you know. There's a lot more in there. It's Los Angeles, so of course there's drama. You know, it fits well here.
Still drama between the two teams,
juicy,
and ownership,
messy,
and all that.
It's icky.
Arenas, yeah. And everything.
Oh yeah.
Hello, no one is available to take your call.
Ramona, you know what's hard?
What?
Having to sell a $2 billion team in like 10 days.
Yeah, it's a good problem to have.
It's always good, especially if you need cash. You need it fast.
Quick close.
you know what else is hard?
What's that?
Hiring.
Yep.
Hiring is challenging, but there's one place you can go where hiring is simple, fast, and smart. A place where growing businesses connect to qualified candidates. Ramona, where is that place?
ZipRecruiter, man. Listen, I could have used some ZipRecruiter. I've been just executive producing this podcast for a while. Man, it took a while to find the right people. You gotta I could have filed that off the ZipRecruiter in like two seconds.
Here it was. You had it right in front of you because, you know, the ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards, and they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter could have scanned thousands of resumes for you, Ramona, and found people with the right experience and invited them to apply for your job. And as those applications came in, ZipRecruiter could have analyzed each one, spotlighted the top candidates, and you wouldn't have missed that great match that you needed. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Think about how easier it would have been if you had in one day gotten those people you needed.
My God, I can't even think about that.
it depresses you? Well, next time that you do a podcast like this, which maybe will be never because of how much you had to go through, I wouldn't blame you for that.
You know, it's kind of like giving birth. At the end of it, you forget.
Okay, good. Well, next time, instead of giving birth, call ZipRecruiter. And right now, our listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/collective. You know that already. And if you don't know how to spell collective, I don't know how you got this far in the podcast, but it's ZipRecruiter.com/collective. ZipRecruiter.com/collective. Because ZipRecruiter is the smartest way to hire.
I need ZipRecruiter to find me a wedding planner.
Hello. No one is available to take your call.
This year in L.A., you guys both live here. This year in L.A. is going to be wild. By the way, did Kawhi have his braids in today, or do you have his hair out?
Braids in. I was a little disappointed.
He put the braids
the
back
out.
In.
Yeah, so I was at an event where Kawhi donated 1 million backpacks to schools all over Southern California, and he announced it with a nonprofit. And so there were a couple actresses there, like Zooey Deschanel and Busy Phillips, and so he spoke really briefly, reading from something, and you could barely hear him talking into the mic. Now, he was taller than the mic, but he was so shy. And like later, I talked to Jim Hill, the esteemed Jim Hill, and Jim Hill was like,
Jim Hill's a TV personality here in LA.
Yeah, he was like, wow, Kawhi is really shy. That man is shy. You could tell. And he went to go talk to a class, and then he was out the door and gone. Like, we saw him walk, and he was gone.
Well, that's who he is. I mean, Kawhi is Kawhi. I mean, you know, it's not like he's going to change just because he came to LA. I mean,
but like he, you know, earlier in the morning, he went and stopped by, I guess, his old elementary school and, talked to kids and everything. And he's trying to reestablish his roots again in Southern California.
I think it's a really good thing they have Paul George on the team. Because
for a lot
he's
going to
take so much of that public facing role. Oh, you know, off of Kawhi's shoulders. Like, Kawhi can just go play basketball.
And he has
kind
a head
like
coach.
Kind of like the way Kyle Lowry did in Toronto
last
year.
Yeah, I mean,
and he has a head coach that takes everything.
Magic Johnson Award winner, like, every year.
Yeah, I think one of the interesting things about the Clippers is going to be when the season gets going and we're going to judge them, I think they're going to be a great team. It's going to, you know, Kawhi has never played with a guy like Paul George. This is a pretty gigantic departure for him because in San Antonio, it was a system-based operation. And in last year in Toronto, he was at the center of the universe. He's never had a sort of a star to share with. I mean, yes, Tim Duncan, yes, Ginobili, but it was all about the system there. So it's a, it's going to be a, like, it's just, you know, my experience from being around these newly created super teams, like, I really do expect it's going to be a challenge. And the Clippers have a bunch of travel in the preseason. They're doing a training camp in Hawaii, which is beautiful. Then they're going to Japan, but I don't know if that's going to be good or bad.
No, they're not going to Japan. I think the Rockets are.
The Rockets are going to Japan. I'm sorry. Yeah. Strike that.
But Doc does want to go to Japan, but not this year, maybe in the future.
Well, they won't be going again because the reason they're going, well, I don't say ever, but the reason they're going is to be ahead of the Olympics.
Yeah.
But yeah, they're going, all right, that works out a little bit better. All right. My brain was fried on that, but I just think that the Clippers, I'm going to try to temper expectations coming out of the gate.
Really?
I sort of feel a little bit differently about the Lakers. The Lakers schedule, Ramona, is so favorable in their first 20 or 24 games.
It's almost like it's set up that way.
But LeBron kind of likes to ease into seasons.
Uh-huh.
I think they got to have the gas down from the start. I mean, I understand why LeBron used to play that way because he was thinking about June. Yeah. I don't, you know, why would LeBron care about a 3-game losing streak in November? But with as tight as the West is going to be, like in my mind, especially the Lakers first
14.
First 14 games are really.
9 of the first 14 are at home.
10 are at home.
Yeah, because, but really 10 because one of them is in Staples Center.
Right, with a Clippers quote unquote road game.
Yep.
And most of those games are, in fact, the other four road games they have, only one of those teams made the playoffs.
But
last year.
I will argue against what you think that the Lakers, everybody thinks the Lakers are going to get off to a quick start. And yes, LeBron James is going to be motivated. He hasn't played an entire postseason in a long time where he's just had time off. But this team has a lot of new parts again for the second straight year. Okay.
I know that.
They're going to China and their coaching staff, they have a whole new coaching staff that doesn't even know each other.
I know. And yet I still think they've got, like, here's the thing. We've talked about this before on this podcast. The Lakers schedule is a football season schedule. That means all of their games, generally all of their big tough games are backloaded after football season ends. So especially till Christmas, the Lakers schedule toward till Christmas is very favorable.
Mm-hmm.
They've got it. Like in my mind, in that 14 games, let's just assume the Anthony Davis and LeBron are healthy. It's got to be 10-4, 11-3.
Pile up the wins.
Yeah. They got to, like, they, like, I know that this sounds so naive to me to say, oh, that November and December matter in the NBA. For the Lakers this year, I think it matters. They got to get up. Plus, you don't want the pressure to be on Vogel.
Right. How many quick starts has LeBron gotten off to under a new coach?
Silence.
That's all I'm saying. And here's, and you 100% right. If the Lakers are 500 after Thanksgiving and, you know, how much heat is on Frank Vogel? Especially we don't see LeBron talking to Frank Vogel.
What's your impression of Frank so far?
I think he's a great guy. And I think so far from what we've seen his interaction with LeBron in the very small snippets we're seeing at these little workouts and things like that, it looks good. It looks like Frank
LeBron
is trying to develop a relationship with him.
Invested in supporting Frank Vogel.
Yes.
He came to his press conference.
Yep.
He's come to other things. Then the Lakers have like a workout or something, and he came.
Yep.
Training camp, yeah. Summer league practice. He came. Mm-hmm. LeBron has been more present in a summer with a coach than any time I can
remember. Hard not to like Frank. Frank is very personable,
and LeBron does have a rapport with Frank. They played each other in the playoffs many times. I think LeBron's going to try to make a go of it. That said, I know this sounds like a broken record here. July and August LeBron are not January and February LeBron. He can have all of the best intentions in the world, it not be any sort of conspiracy, and he just the it switches and the competitor comes out, and he can turn his back on you lickety split.
Like Wendy, they have a stretch, I think, at the end of November but early December, 8 of 9 games on the road. It is a tough stretch. And these are the type of stretches that, like, if this team is learning each other and still having a rocky start, those are the type of stretches that just, like, the pressure starts to mount.
I remember, like, Doc Rivers used to use this analogy before. Like, early season wins are like putting money in the bank. You just, you know, yes, they, you know, you don't judge a team December 1st and say whether they're going to be a championship team, although historically teams that get off to a good start typically are the championship teams. And you put those in the bank so that when you hit that 8 out of 9 on the road, or you hit that where, you know, LeBron's got a turned ankle, right, or Anthony Davis got a sore knee or something like that, and you lose 4 out of 5 or 5 out of 8, you withdraw from that. The Lakers have to put some wins in the
bank. Last year's Lakers team did not hit a stride until Christmas Day in Golden State, but then LeBron got hurt and Rondo got hurt that night, and everything collapsed after that. The reason why I would make the argument of you saying the Clippers, you don't know how fast a start the Clippers will get. I actually would argue the opposite. I know Paul George is going to be hurt. I'm not even expecting Paul George early on, but that team has chemistry already. They have the best bench in the league. They have Doc Rivers and his staff. They added Ty Lue. They have continuity, even though they are adding in a superstar, but that superstar's game seems tailor-made to that team already. That's why I think the Clippers are going to get off to a quicker start than the Lakers.
I really like what the Clippers have, just in the sense that they have, this is a team that pushed the Warriors to 6 games in the first round. They look great. They play hard. They hustle. The only question I have, and I think this is a good problem to have, is the Clippers had one of the most deadly combinations in the league last year with that pick and roll with Lou Williams and Montrezl Harrell.
Oh my God. It took down the Warriors a couple of times and scared them a couple
others. So what happens to that now? And it's a
fantastic
good problem to
point.
Have, okay?
I mean, my assumption would be that they will get their little segment of the game to play that way.
Yeah. You
know? Because they knew last year when they put that crew on there, that was their advantage. Their advantage was their second unit was going to destroy the other team's second unit.
So to me, and this is the same question for the Lakers, who is going to be the third guy?
Mm-hmm.
I know Kuzma thinks he's going to be the third guy, and maybe he will be. I'm not there on Kyle Kuzma.
How can he not be the third guy?
Well,
who else could be? Danny Green?
Well, I'm not saying that he's not slotted into it. I'm saying, can he be that guy?
I think Kuz can score with anybody. I think he can score anytime he wants. The only thing is, he was actually pretty good at adapting his game to what he needed to do last year. Other people needed, like, the ball in their hands all the time. Like, I think that was harder on Ingram and Lonzo when LeBron had the ball all the time.
I agree with that.
So I think Kuz plays off of LeBron fairly well. I think he's mature. I think he knows what he's
doing.
Well,
there's a reason why he's still there.
Correct. However, the rest of Kuzma's game is the part that is the question. Is, can he play defense at this level? Is he going to be a guy that can create his own shot when he needs to?
He shot 30% from three.
Yeah.
And he just, like,
I know he's working though.
I know.
And like, that's your point's well taken. Can he be the third guy? That's what they got to figure out, because otherwise, pretty soon they're going to have to decide if they're going
to
pay.
To me, this entire Western Conference season is who's got the third guy. Who's
got
the third
guy? Everybody's got two guys.
Like, is, you look at Utah. Yeah. Okay, they've got Gobert and
Donovan.
Is Mike Conley the third guy? Will he be the third guy?
Pretty damn good third guy.
Yeah, right. That's why people are excited about them. You know, Denver. Okay, they've got Jokic for
and
sure.
Jamal Murray.
They got Jamal Murray. Who's going to be the third guy? Is it going to be Gary Harris?
Right.
Is it going to be somebody else? You look at Portland, McCollum,
Lillard.
Damian. Who's the third guy? You look at the Warriors. Will D'Angelo Russell fill in the shoes of Klay Thompson? And then is that third guy? Is Draymond?
It's got to be Draymond.
I mean, you know. Who's the third guy? That to me is the story of the Western Conference.
Sounds like a sitcom.
And I'm looking at the Lakers, and they have a classic case of that.
Well, Kuz would argue that he shot 30% from three last year, didn't shoot the ball very well, and still averaged 18 points, almost 20 points per game.
I don't care about the points per game average. I care about efficiency. This is not 2001. You know,
or you can just be like Pop and don't focus on the plus minus.
I think Plop is aware of the plus minus. His point was he's not going to take any one-off game,
which is
fine.
But Kuz defensively is an issue. Frank Vogel has said this. When I asked Frank Vogel specifically, like, hey, can you see Kuz potentially being that third guy? The first thing Vogel mentioned was defense.
Yeah.
And he said, we know he's an effort guy, and we can work with that first and foremost. For young guys, he shows the effort, and he goes, we can work with that. Kuz says, even if he doesn't make Team USA, he's already become a better defender because he's been in these pop practices and he's been going up against guys who are playing way harder than, say, your normal pickup game during the summertime.
Yeah, I mean, they experimented with him a little bit, and knowing that, you know, in the exhibition game, they put him at center.
But, and we've seen in some of those USA practices, Kuz will get sealed off inside the paint real quick, and that guy will score pretty easily.
He's not, that's not who he is.
Yeah.
The Lakers have a little bit of a mismatched roster there. They have two of the best big men. I mean, I'll put LeBron in as a sort of a big man guy because he can play inside. Two of the best we've ever seen in the league, but they don't want to play that position. They don't want to defend that position.
I think you have hit it on the dot, Wendy. With this injury to DeMarcus Cousins, depending, obviously they can go out and get another big. We don't know who he's going to be. Dwight Howard's body may not be there. Mentally, he may not be there as well. Joakim Noah, same thing with his body. I mean, he showed some flashes at the end of last season. Even if they go get a young guy, let's say like Tyler Zeller type or something like that. I think LeBron is going to have to play some center this year. And I think there's going to be some convincing from the Lakers that are going to just be like, forget about the number five, forget about the positions. There's just going to have to be sacrifice from guys, whether it be Kuzma and things like that. And I know you're shaking your head right now because Anthony Davis doesn't even like playing center. But I think at some times they're going to have to look at that.
I think you can probably get away with that in certain individual situations. I don't think you can ask them to do that on any regular basis. They just won't do it.
Especially if they don't get somebody who they can use as a big body, or let's say they ended up using one of their roster spot on, say, like Carmelo. You know?
I'm sorry, what?
I think Carmelo.
You know something I don't know?
I think Carmelo his name is being mentioned.
Wow.
That would be.
I'm not saying they're gonna do it.
That would be Ramona, don't you think the Dwight Howard to the Lakers is just insane?
Yes. I don't, well, I won't use that word, but
okay.
I would say.
All right.
I would be very surprised if that ends up.
Well off what you think they need.
Yes.
And what about Carmelo?
I feel like I don't hate that as much as the Dwight idea.
Okay, I guess I can agree with that sentence.
You know, that's a sentence, okay? that's the only way I'll phrase
don't
that.
Hate I don't as much as that. Okay, I'll go
so
with
the
that.
So the reason, the Dwight idea, I just think there's too much history here. And while he could be helpful to them, I don't know how much he can play, really. And the one thing that you need after this Boogie injury is somebody who's going to stay healthy and you can count on to depend on.
I don't know. Maybe I'm showing
Can you depend on him? I mean, he might, high risk, high reward, I suppose. But he's been hurt so much, like,
maybe
you can't take another big injury risk like
maybe
that.
Maybe I'm showing my age here. But I just have this parade of guys over the hill onto LeBron teams over the years. They never work out. Never. I can't tell you the amount of like 35 to 38-year-olds that have come onto the end of LeBron's team's benches over the last 10 years. I can give you the parade of names. I'm not gonna. But they range from Shaq, you know, to Eric Dampier, to Tyson Chandler, you know, and it just doesn't work. It's just like, you've got to have a guy who can help you there. I see it happen over and over and over. Like, even LeBron, even Wade coming to the Cavs, even though Wade had some stuff left in the tank, it was a bad idea.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't work. It just, you need a role-playing young guy who wants to –
And there are people – I mean, there are veterans who can fit that kind of role. Like, I think you bring a guy like, let's say, Jamal Crawford. Good personality, doesn't need to take over, could do something like
that. I would disagree. I mean, I like Jamal, but no.
But he doesn't
need
to be the guy.
No old guys. No old guys.
I'm going to play this back
to you in about 10
years.
So, wait, no old guys
– does
that apply to – that applies to Melo?
Yes. No old guys. They need.
Look, I think if Carmelo was going to be a Laker, he would already have been a Laker many times over. I think that doesn't it seem like they had opportunity last year when they don't have anything left to play for. They could have added him, and they chose not to.
Right.
So
I definitely think
if you just wanted to do right by him, if you're LeBron and you just want to do right by your friend and just give him throw him a lifeline so he can play for the Lakers and rehabilitate his image and his career, that would have been the time to do it.
Well, no, now they can do it because of DeMarcus. But I think the reason why it hasn't happened is because there is some pushback in the Lakers organization.
As there should be.
Yeah, I mean,
Mike Bibby, Jerry Stackhouse.
Would you hold that roster spot for Iguodala?
Jamal McGlure. Yeah, but Iguodala is not the same type of player as those guys. No. Iguodala was still very vibrant in the league last year.
Yeah.
Even though his age is up there.
Yeah.
No, man. You gotta get a real
player.
But
they need another big because you just can't depend on Anthony Davis and JaVale
McGee.
Iguodala
is a separate issue. You get Iguodala. If you can get Iguodala, you freaking take him. And then you worry about your roster spot. Kind of the real melancholy thing to me is, I think the Lakers are going to have to offload Boogie. They're either going to have to cut him outright.
I know.
Maybe
it's
not,
so cold.
Not today, but at some point they're going to need the roster spot. They're going to cut him outright, or they're going to try to trade him. You know, he's got $3.5 million on his salary. He actually has some value in a trade ballast, but like I'm sorry. They're going to probably have to say goodbye to Boogie. Like he literally may not be around the team.
That's crazy.
Which is what happened. Like. Andrew Bogut signing with LeBron's Cavs team broke his leg. And I know that Bogut had a few minutes last year, but I'm just saying, like, these were like the guys that were
being
available.
Added.
Yeah, so I'm saying, like, it's crazy.
There's a lot of guys, like, there's no shortage of available centers. I mean, I could just go down a list.
You know, like Marcin Gortat.
Yeah,
like
Zaza Pachulia. Yeah. There's plenty of guys out there.
Gortat, by the way, like, I don't even know. I remember watching him toward the end with John Wall, and I felt like he couldn't move.
Well,
laterally.
Gortat is a little bit. Gortat's a little bit better than. I wouldn't hate the Gortat. I would, like Tyson Chandler.
Tyson, great in locker room, but I think physically
no,
his
nobody
body's
has, nobody
done.
Has a. Nobody has a bad thing to say about Tyson Chandler, but.
But his body just.
Yes,
he tried,
can't sign old guys.
He tried so hard. You know,
it's a thing. Like I know, like people are talking about Joakim Noah. I know that Joakim Noah had. A bright spot or two with the Grizzlies last year, but you need a guy who can play 15 to 20 minutes every night or every other night. I don't know if Joakim, I guess I could be wrong, but I just can't do it. I can't spend any more time on this. But you know,
I'm with you on the idea that you don't want to have players with a ton of baggage coming because it usually doesn't end well. I would say, though, that not every single one of those players should fall into the same category.
That's a fair thing to say.
You know, each guy. I mean,
okay,
does Vince Carter, you know, he gets a job every year.
I wouldn't want them to sign Vince Carter either, with all due respect to Vince, who I have a great relationship with. I'm just being honest. Well, anyway, I mean, it's a terrible blow. But here's the thing. Here's the thing that I think fans actually thought that Boogie was like going to average 25 and 10 for the Lakers this year. That was not what he was going to do. But he could have helped them. He could have helped them win a handful of games.
Yep.
And
he can get them double doubles on certain nights. He might have been a defensive liability, but you know, on nights that Anthony Davis rests, you had DeMarcus Cousins.
I know. I know he hasn't always made the best decisions, but. I don't have a bad thing to say about him, and I feel bad that this went down this way, and I feel bad that they're probably going to have to cut him, and he won't even be around the team at some point. That's just,
I mean,
business.
This is a cold business, right? And what I don't even think you could call the Lakers cold if they had to do that. It's just they literally will need the roster spot.
Yeah,
he's going to get paid.
Yeah, $3.5 million. But all right, well, Ramona, thank you for spending some time with us in your busy, very busy.
Are you tired of me yet? See me on like every. I was on Stephen A. Smith's show, and he was like, "How you doing?" I'm like, "Man, I've been on as many shows as you are."
Moment, did you ever lose your voice during the podcast?
A little bit, yeah. When I was tracking, there was like one or two. Actually, you know what? It was actually when we first started. It was the day after the ESPYs, so I had like total party voice. Right?
Everybody had party voice.
Yeah,
that night.
Yeah, because you go to the ESPYs and it's really loud in there all the time, and like you just can't. It's like, I wasn't even drinking. I was just like, it was just really loud. So every conversation you have, you're like yelling. So the next morning we're supposed to track and I'm like, I'm going to need some tea, some honey. We had to redo a lot of that.
All right. Well, keep up the good work. Take a listen to the Sterling Affairs.
You want me to do it?
Yes, please.
You can download it at the 30for30podcast.com/Sterling and on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere podcasts are found.
That's your podcast voice?
Would you like me to do it?
Is
like
that podcast Momo?
That was the mic that you actually were using, right?
Yeah, that was the mic.
All right.
We have like a special screen.
Podcast Momo?
I think I sound like...
No, it's definitely a more professional sounding than
yeah,
that on this
more,
amateur
yeah.
podcast.
all right, well, show up and talk into the mic.
Thank you, Om.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ramona. I'm going to China.
China Wendy. China Wendy.
Maybe we'll do a podcast.
Have you been before?
No.
I ate a lot of Kentucky Fried Chicken when I was there.
Dude, first of all, the KFCs, like in Thailand, the KFC is unbelievable. KFC and Pizza
really
Hut
good.
Are so good. They're yeah. better than in the United States.
And it was like, I really wanted to have Chinese food, but if you're going to have
no,
really good
minute.
Chinese
Om
food, you got to go to a
proud...
real restaurant. You can't just have the street food because you could get sick.
Yeah, look, like, you go to Thailand for 3 weeks. At some point,
yeah.
you're like, I need a little variety.
You're
and
a
so
proud
I gotta go.
Thai.
Yes, I am. I am a little worried about what you're going to be able to eat in China, though.
Kentucky Fried Chicken, Pizza Hut, you're going to be fine.
I'll be fine. It'll be interesting to see what sort of condition I am if I'm in this probably do a podcast from over there. All right, thanks for listening to Hoop Collective Podcast. We will talk to you soon. Maybe I'll be in China. Maybe you'll never hear from me again. Otherwise, have a nice day.